music. Again, that's Don't Look Back on Thursday, January 10th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the film screening From Shock to Awe, A Journey of Hope and Transformation, on Thursday, January 10th at the Sunnyside Community House in Portland. From Shock to Awe follows the path of two combat veterans from the Iraq War as they live with post-traumatic stress, lack of effective treatment, and their search for healing and transformation through plant medicine journeys. Again, that's the film screening From Shock to Awe, A Journey of Hope and Transformation, on Thursday, January 10th at 7 p.m. at the Sunnyside Community House, 3520 Southeast Yamhill Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Press Watch, your weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported radio station, KBOO Portland. Join me, won't you, for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, let me get into some headlines. And then I want to talk about the Green New Deal with you. This is one of the things that, this is one of those spots in the zeitgeist in which a community radio station can really shine, can really do the right thing. And I think the Green New Deal is a sort of icon that we can all grab onto and we can make what we want out of it. And it'll be interesting what it turns out to be. We'll have more details in that in a minute. But just to prime your thoughts, I would like to invite you to call in later, after the headlines, about the Green New Deal. What would you like it to be? How are we going to get there? And maybe even, what can we transform that into? And of course, when I say that, I mean in terms of my own ideals as an anarcho-socialist. A commie, basically. Little C commie. I want to see where we can go with this. Manafort is in the news. The interesting, I don't have a copy on this, but I just want to say off the cuff, Trump's campaign manager, Manafort, has been in all sorts of trouble, but Trump has been able to say during this Russiagate investigation that Manafort did all his dirty deeds outside of the frame of the campaign. Well, that has changed now, and that's why I want to direct your attention to Manafort. This is good news in terms of possibly getting rid of Trump and discrediting his mob style of government, gaining power for the people and away from the billionaires. It's a good thing that Manafort's getting busted by Mueller and all that. And of course, I need to reframe that because I'm not part of the, you know, CNN, MSNBC narrative that the election went bad because of the Russians. That's nonsense. The election went bad because so many Americans are disgusting, narcissistic, closed-minded, ignorant racists. Hi, fellow Americans. You make me sick. And, of course, those are not the Americans that I prefer and that I hang out with and that generally I'm speaking to, broadcasting to right now. But, well, 60 million of you, you're disgusting. And you need to clean yourselves up. And if you want to know how the Republicans stole the election, you need to pull up gregpalast.com and read everything. Read everything on there until you understand how racist vote caging, actual destruction of votes, apartheid rule tactics stole the election and put the orange narcissist in power. So having said that, here's a headline from Radio Havana, Cuba. Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador urged his diplomats to defend the rights of Mexican migrants in the United States. López Obrador, when defining foreign policy priorities of his government, said, "We need to support our countrymen a lot abroad in a special way to support the Mexicans who live and work in the United States." The 50 Mexican consulates in the U.S. Have to become a kind of attorney for the defense of migrants. That's what Obrador said. In a central part of his speech, Obrador said, quote, "The basic strategy is to build development curtains from the south to the north. That is to promote productive projects to create jobs from south to north. And we are also including sister countries of Central America," end quote. According to López Obrador, quote, "The ideal, the dream that we want to turn into reality is that the Mexican can work and be happy where he was born, where his family members are, where their customs are, where their culture is, and that migration is optional, not mandatory," end quote. Regarding migration, the most controversial issue of the relationship with the Trump administration, López Obrador raised the need to, quote, "convince and persuade that the best way to confront the migration phenomenon is development, the creation of jobs, not the use of force, not the use of coercive measures," end quote. Again, that was from Radio Havana, Cuba. And, of course, you can find that on the web. You can also listen to Radio Havana, Cuba on shortwave radio. And I try to promote terrestrial radio every chance I get. There are advantages to it. As I've often said, for one thing, you're not spied upon everything that you tune into the way that you are spied upon when you use your cell phone or your laptop or what have you. But there are other substantial advantages. The batteries in a radio, if you have a battery-powered radio, last for weeks, not a day. And we are going to have climate disruptions, and in this region we are going to have a massive earthquake. We don't really know. It could happen today, it could happen in the next 100 years, but it's very, very wise, I think, to have battery-powered radios because, well, even though KBOO is committed to getting back on the air as soon as we can, our engineers have discussed this at great length. We intend to be there for you, but in those first hours, of course, we'll be knocked out, too. I mean, for one thing, we'll just need to get power, if nothing else. And well, this building we're in is unreinforced masonry, so it'll take some doing. In the meantime, if you have a shortwave radio, you will be able to attach a wire to the antenna and listen to what is going on. You'll actually be able to get reports when no one else can. And ironically, shortwave radios have become very cheap. That's because China makes them. When you look up, for example, on the Chinese equivalent of Amazon, whose name is escaping me right now, you can find, if you look up AM/FM radio, what you get is AM/FM shortwave radios. And they're quite inexpensive. Actually, I'm thinking of getting some of those for our next membership drive. And actually, if you have an opinion about that, if you think that would be a good pledge premium, this is your way of cooperating in the whole thing. I think you should. You should think of your, right now you're listening, you're cooperating in community radio by listening. But you may want to help us with pledge drive. So if you have an opinion about whether that would be a good pledge premium for Press Watch, for raising funds on pledge drive coming up in just a month or so, you can say that as well. So we've done that first headline. Another headline, this has actually been covered on Democracy Now!, is Senate Bill 720, the Israel Anti-Boycott Act. It's noxious. I want to go into a little bit of detail on it, pardon me, by reading to you some of what the American Civil Liberties Union has written about it. They wrote to senators. They say, "We write today in opposition to Senate Bill 720, also known as the Israel Anti-Boycott Act. We understand that the proponents of the bill are seeking additional co-sponsors. We urge you to refrain from co-sponsoring the legislation because it would punish individuals for no other reason than their political beliefs." Now, speaking for myself, I hope that Senator Ron Wyden is listening to that, because Senator Ron Wyden is one of the co-sponsors of the bill. He's very enthusiastic about the Israel Anti-Boycott Act, and it's one of the aspects of Senator Wyden that I find least palatable. Because of our political system, it is necessary to work with Senator Wyden, for example, on the Green New Deal. He's enthusiastic about that, which I think is terrific. He's powerful, and his promotion of the Green New Deal will help a great deal, but we can't let him do this thing in which... Well, let me give you the frame. In the first place, it is necessary under the political situation, with Nazis marching in the street, to point out that I don't believe in anything that the Nazis believe in when it comes to Jews, nor any of their peripheral cozy with Nazi media. And I oppose Likudnik parties, I oppose Likudnik policies of aggressing on a racist basis, frankly, against the Palestinian people, whom they call Arabs. Their crimes against the Palestinian people are too long to go into now, but they are crimes and they are ongoing. One of the excuses they often come up with was, well, you know, aspects of the Palestinian organizations collaborated with the Nazis way back when. That was four generations ago now. And it's not a good argument, frankly. Half of France collaborated with the Nazis, and I do not see the Israelis going over to France and sniping people dead, which is what they do in Israel, across their wall, when people peacefully protest. You know, throwing rocks is the worst that they do. Demanding their right of return. They do have a right of return, and the Boycott Act is a way of making you shut up, and Israel's message to you through the U.S. Congress, through Senator Ron Wyden, is shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up. It's obnoxious. It's also anti-constitutional. We have a right to boycott things. The ACLU writes, the bill seeks to expand the Export Administration Act of 1979 and the Export-Import Bank of 1945, which, among other things, prohibit U.S. persons from complying with a foreign government's request, to boycott a country friendly to the U.S. The bill would amend those laws to bar U.S. persons from supporting boycotts against Israel, including its settlements in the Palestinian-occupied territories conducted by international government organizations such as the United Nations and the European Union. It would also broaden the law to include penalties for simply requesting information about such boycotts. Violations would be, get this, subject to a minimum civil penalty of $250,000 and a maximum criminal penalty of $1 million and 20 years in prison. The ACLU writes, we take no position for or against the effort to boycott Israel or any foreign country for that matter. However, we do assert that the government cannot, consistent with the First Amendment, punish U.S. persons based solely on their expressed political beliefs. This bill would impose civil and criminal punishments on individuals solely because of their political beliefs about Israel and its policies. There are millions of businesses and individuals who do no business with Israel or with companies doing business there for a number of reasons. Some, like those who would face serious penalties and jail time under the bill, actively avoid purchasing goods or purchases from companies that do business in Israel and the Palestinian-occupied territories because of a political viewpoint opposed to Israeli policy. Now, I can't speak directly for KBOO Radio. I'm just a volunteer here. But I know that KBOO is also part of boycott, divestment, and sanctions, and I support that wholeheartedly. Why? Because I love my Palestinian friends. I believe in freedom. I believe in people's personal autonomy. I also happen to love Jews and Jewishness, and I think it's wonderful. But even if I didn't, I would respect the right of Israel to exist. I would respect the right of Jews in the United States to be free from discrimination. But this must also extend to Palestinians. And I can't be silent on this because the U.S. gives billions of dollars every year to Israel, and also more direct military aid and very important logistical cooperation with their warfare. So Palestinians really just don't have a chance unless we in the belly of the beast speak up for them. I guess when it gets down to it, it's just so grossly unfair and immoral to help Israel crush Palestine. It is an attempt to wipe them out. There's a word for that, and I don't feel like saying it right now, but I'll bet you know what it is. So I support boycott, divestment, and sanctions, and I think you should too. KBU does. And I reject this attempt to criminalize us, and you should know this bill could be used to criminalize KBOO. I hope that shocks you. And I hope that someone will call up Senator Ron Wyden. It's easy enough to do. Look up his number on the web. Or the Yellow Pages if you don't use the web. And tell him what you think. Now, when it comes to the Green New Deal, I think it's time for it. I think it's time for it for a number of reasons. Number to call with your comments and questions on the Green New Deal is 503-231-8187. If you didn't catch it, don't worry. I'll give it several times in a minute. Now, I'm a white U.S. American. I have a house, a bank account. I'm old. I live on pensions. In the morning, I get up rested, generally speaking. I bathe and dress. I get in a generation-old car to take my spouse to work. Dear gods, I'm lucky because this economy and the society is a wreck. I got my pensions from whiteness. I was not particularly virtuous. And if I were not white, my lack of virtue would put me in one of those tents if I were even alive this far into my life. I'm 60 years old. Let me explain. I was raised in an affluent suburb. I had some minor birth defects. Well, they were surgically mediated. I completed high school. I got to attend college. Lucky me. Some of that would not have happened if I'd been born with brown skin. Certainly, at the point of graduating high school, I would not be full of fond memories of a well-fed childhood in a quiet neighborhood. So, when I dropped out of college, I could still find work with my easy smile and my extensive vocabulary and my pale skin. And when I got a house in the great subprime mortgage scam of the turn of the century, I had the education to dodge foreclosure. So I still have a house. And when I joined a union to drive a bus, I was not subject to the petty micromanaging that I observed being applied to my brown-skinned fellow drivers. There was some attempt because I'm a trans. But all that whiteness helped me, all that education. And it was easy to keep the job. So after 17 years, I got a pension, money for life. Lucky me. Lucky white lucky. I've been stopped because I pissed off cops. Guns have been drawn on me by furious cops. I mean, three 357 Magnums with a hammer back. And I did not get shot, even though they hated my guts. Think of that. Now that's white privilege. 15 blocks from where I turned my car onto the street, people are living in the freezing cold, in the rain, in the snow if it comes, day after night after day, with their families, in cars and tents. Many of them have jobs and as much education as I ever did. Catch these people at their jobs. You'll observe two things. One, they're tired. The other thing is, if you ask them, they'll tell you that despite currently going through a rough patch, they're essentially middle class. Yeah, I'm middle class, they say. What, if you're a class, what class are you? I'm middle class. Living in a tent, they'll tell you this. That's how far the delusion goes. I'm not trying to blame them. I'm just telling you, we are brainwashed. These people I talk to, they'll do their best to believe that. They keep up their cell phone bills. They engage in online forums. They bathe furtively, quickly in public restrooms. They do what they can to survive, but there's no trash pickup or sanitary service if you're living on the streets. So inevitably, rappers and filth spread up from miserable little enclaves by the freeway. There's no relief from the weather for them. It's a camping trip that never ends. But it isn't just the climate and random hooligans they must fear. They must constantly be on the lookout for police who will swoop in on them, search them, set prisoners to work, sweeping away all that they own, tents, sleeping bags, papers, bicycles, heirlooms, everything. They are cynically given a receipt to a faraway depot where none of them ever recover their things. This goes on incessantly. No one may rest. They die. They die like flies from the constant stress. Grandmothers, teenagers, young men, the sick, the infirm, the mad, mostly people in their 50s and 60s die. It's hard to survive any greater age when you're living like that. Few cities make any count at all, but here in the Portland, 70 or 80 people died this way last year, if I remember correctly. and their corpses are removed by city crews and stacked by the municipal crematorium in a warehouse on the east side. Their ashes sit in labeled little cardboard boxes. Sometimes they sit there for generations. And that homelessness, that houselessness, it serves a very important function for this billionaire corporate-run society, and that is to terrify you, because you are just a paycheck away from it, and you know it. You are threatened by this. You could be struck by a car, knocked senseless for a month, and when you come to, you have lost everything, and you will be homeless. This is a very effective threat. It works against you. This is the poverty. We need to confront the fact the United States is in poverty. The people of the United States live in poverty. The people of the United States live in terror of utter misery, homelessness, and poverty. We don't address this. It's out of the news. We don't talk about it. We like to say we're middle class. We're in poverty. And we need a new deal. And we are in poverty because of political decisions that have been made that have stripped the value of our labor away and given it to people like Jeff Bezos of Amazon, people like Zuckerberg, and the way that we do it is insane. And we often say, one of the crazy things, and it's not just crazy to say that a homeless person is middle class. It's also crazy to say that a billionaire earned his money. You don't earn billions of dollars. No one works that fast or that smart. Not even close. No, they amass it. They extract it. They are parasites. And we have been given this mythology that somehow they earned it. They did not earn it. Please, do me a favor. Never use the word earn when you're talking about a billionaire. So I turn my car into the main road, and I see the stereotype. Here's the stereotype: a man drunkenly passed out in a midden of wrappers and bottles, part of his torso out of the rain in the business doorway, and legs and feet out in the elements getting rained on. He looks like a cynical artist's exposition of unhinged materialism and social apathy installed at the gallery to be perused and considered with wine and cheese, but he's not. He's on the street in an explosion of trash. I briefly wonder if he's died, but he's gone when I return. If I were to drive my car all the way up the hill, the one that I can see on the way into my spouse's job, I would enter an area where I would be carefully monitored and eventually stopped and questioned. This would happen despite the fact that the car is clean, registered, almost undented. It is the relative value of the car that would attract this attention. It's worth a little more than $1,000 if I sold it, so such a car could only belong in that area to a servant or a thief. After a license check for warrants, for whiteness, I would be told to move along. Not if I were brown. Manicured lawns slope to immaculate edifices up there on Capitol Hill. Capitol Hill? That's not the name of the hill, anyway, that you can see from here. There are BMW and Maybach cars are hidden in heated, capacious garages, treated much better than humans. Inside the waxed mahogany mansions, brown people are busy, quietly cleaning, cooking organic kitchens, pruning prize roses. The white owners of these houses inherited their wealth, but they will be quick to tell you otherwise. They will tell you how clever they were in selecting the right persons to invest their patrimony. And computer-controlled stock dealers that have a privileged location right to and even under the stock exchange in New York. Earned every penny they did, and that's what they'll tell you. They rarely meet in person, but when they do, they talk of polo and the best private jets with bespoke gold-plated fittings and their marbled floor showers. They speak of shoes and dresses that cost more than their car, and you don't see that stuff. The polo grounds are just out of town. There's polo grounds here. Oh, yeah. You'll never be invited. Those jets with the gold-plated fittings, they're at the Troutdale Airport. You'll never see them. If I were to attempt such class tourism as a brown-skinned person, I would not just risk being stopped, of course. I would have my car searched, and if the officer decided I needed to be permanently removed, he could throw down a bag of some white powder, lock me up for a generation. A bag of some white powder. I think that was a Freudian slip. Or he could just say that he felt in danger and shoot me to death. He'd get away with it. And far from my sight, in the prisons tucked away behind the hills, brown-skinned persons and white poor persons rot for decades in hellish halls, condemned for petty marijuana infractions, the same ones that I committed with impunity. This is the great victory of capitalism. But wait, there's more. In Yemen, U.S.-supplied cluster bombs tear apart markets and hospitals. The streets reek of cholera as people stumble in the throes of starvation, looking neither to the right nor the left. In Afghanistan, a doll-like hand arcs gracefully through the air, trailing a ruby mist, never to be reattached to the three-year-old daughter it came from. In Iraq, the young men set off bombs in futile attempts to remove the foreigners, occupying them from the titanic U.S. occupation palace, laughingly called an embassy. Their funding comes by the plane load from a Pentagon that scoffs at attempts at an audit. Trillions of dollars disappear into the U.S. war machine over the years, forever lost to scrutiny and reason. I believe the figure is $21 trillion last anyone looked. Refineries blast toxins by the megaton into East Texas and Louisiana to fuel the Pentagon's voracious jets and ships, the world's largest source of pollution. The Arctic ice writhes and shrinks in its death throes. In Siberia, the silence of the tundra is shattered by sudden echoing blasts, releasing climate-summoned methane, leaving vast craters. Across the landscape of North America, the fireflies and the bees and the crickets and the butterflies quietly vanish, and the birds that ate them starve and disappear. All this is cause enough for revolution. We need a Green New Deal, and we need a revolution. I think the Green New Deal might give us a leg up. What's your opinion? 503-231-8187. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. There are 700 or so billionaires in the U.S., most of whom attained their wealth by the clever ruse of inheriting it. They're doing well with the process of pauperization of the rest of us, rapidly sucking up the remaining privileges of the vanishing middle class. Do you know how that works? Do you understand what capitalism really is? Again and again, when I talk about capitalism, I see that people conflate it with economic activity. They say, oh, you're against capitalism, but you expect to get paid, you know, when you serve that dish at the restaurant. That's not capitalism. That's economic activity. What is capitalism? Capitalism is the idea that you owe, frankly, fealty, that you owe actions, worth, and the greater value of your wage to whoever showed up with the capital first. If you set up a business, if you decide to sell ice cream, and you and your spouse are doing it, and you use your savings, set up a storefront, buy the supplies, churn the ice cream, freeze it, and sell it and make a profit, you're not a capitalist. Just about everyone who does that thinks that they are a capitalist. That's not capitalism. You are a capitalist in a very small way when you hire someone for a wage, and that wage is set at the minimum set by the desperation of everyone else around you who would be forced into that sort of work. If you do that, and you're making enough of that ice cream, and you're selling enough, and you hire someone to distribute, to be a clerk, to distribute that ice cream at a wage, and it's going to be a minimum wage, we know how that works. If you've done everything right, you'll start getting richer and richer. And how did that happen? You'll say you've provided a job for the ice cream scooper and cash register worker and mopper and all that. Now, that's assuming that you've got the sense to do most of that work yourself. You're just putting some of that other work onto someone else. You do that, they work for the wage, you start accumulating wages. Why? Because that person is not being paid the proportionate value of their work. Now, this is capitalism on a very small scale, and I'm not trying to shame ice cream shops out of existing. I'm just defining capitalism. The capitalism happens when you hire someone for a wage. Wage, as the IWW say, wages are theft. They're a ripoff. They're a scam. Because it's easy, mathematically, it's been done for centuries, it's easy to set someone a proportion of whatever profit you might make. That might be less or more than a wage, but it isn't an extraction. Capitalism says, you are not as good as me because I had money first. Now let's extend that into Amazon. Amazon had money first. Amazon has vast warehouses. You go to work, and the wage isn't any better than at the ice cream shop. But they make you work as hard as you possibly can. They say, when you go in there, they say that you're not likely to last more than a few weeks because they're going to work you so hard that you'll get too sore to work. This is even for people who are young. And what they're doing is they're sucking your blood. They're making you work so hard and so fast that they can suck so much money out of everything that you do. Harder and faster. And then you get a wage, and the wage is based on how desperate everyone else is. It's not based at all on how much you work, and certainly it is not based on what your worth is. So that's capitalism. I was saying there are specific ways that pauperization works for the super rich, and the general trends that aid and abet them as well, and that's what I'm talking about. Capitalism. Unquestioned capitalism. Extraction and parasitism to the point that Bezos is a billionaire. When you really think about it, that's obscene. It's certainly not sane. By making the rest of us poor, the pool of workers under capitalism is increased, so the competition among the desperate will ensure that the few of us who find work will find very low wages attached to it, or even no wages. Wage theft is on the increase. There are many forms from the workers who are suddenly abducted just before payday by immigration enforcement to the people who arrive at their workplace to find it shuttered and no place to look for their last several months' wages. Then there's the steady theft of wages by employers who insist that workers show up before and after their shift to set up or clean up without pay. Oh yeah, that's a scam. And it's a tasty time to be a member of the parasite class because the enforcement is very slack and skimpy. So if you're a real capitalist, if you're a Bezos, you can hit a major vein just like that. Want a free college-educated labor? Put up an ad for interns. No need to provide those used blankets. The Starvation Army will take care of that. Take Walmart, for example. Their wages are so low that when a Walmart shows up, it drains the local funds for food stamps. That's a subsidy. It's an indirect subsidy to Walmart. Did I mention general trends? Well, a generation or so of worsening conditions does wonders to put that refreshingly servile attitude into play. If you really think about it, it's bizarre that the whole society will accept the idea of paying, for example, a middleman billions of dollars to prohibit medical care. That's what the medical insurance agency does. They wouldn't make a dime if they didn't prohibit care. And we won't get dollar one. They got to find somebody to prohibit medical care. It's just an accepted form of criminality. In civilized societies, health care is provided just as naturally and automatically as roads, courts, utilities. In the U.S., we have the health denial industry, which is paradoxically called the health care industry, and we act like they're all doing us a favor. Al Capone was very familiar with that kind of favor. But now we have the possibility of a Green New Deal. We'll talk about that. I want you to call in and talk about it. I'm interested to know what you have to say about it. The Green New Deal is an economic stimulus program proposed in the United States that aims to address both economic inequality and climate change. The name refers to the New Deal, a combination of social and economic reforms and the public works projects undertaken by President Franklin D. Roosevelt in response to the Great Depression in the 30s. Supporters of a Green New Deal advocate a combination of Roosevelt's economic approach with modern ideas such as renewable energy and resource efficiency. In other words, clean up the planet and stop the grotesque oppression and poverty that has been created by out-of-control capitalism in the United States. What do you think? Number to call 503-231-8187. I'll go to the first caller. Hi, first caller. Hello? You're on the air.
Is that me?
That's you.
Okay, so I have, maybe it's a question slash statement. I've been trying, lately anyways, to find out, mostly on the internet, what exactly is the perspective of, you know, my quote-unquote enemies, the extreme right wing of folks in our country, because this gap, the Green New Deal, it rings true in my ear like the blue-green alliance, and how you can touch on starting where people are and then articulate the idea from a perspective that they could understand. So in the Green New Deal, It strikes me as the difference between nationalism and globalism as the two ends of the spectrum, and we're fighting amongst ourselves. And the Green New Deal, for me anyways, it speaks to the sovereignty aspect that I find left and right can meet in the middle on sovereignty, in the fact that, you know, our peak oil situation, our politics with Saudi Arabia and Israel, and just a mess. And so I think that the aspects of the Green New Deal that will solidify our sovereignty, we're not going to be reliant on an outside power source. The nature of renewables is decentralized. and would empower the citizenry in a sovereignty aspect, I find that that is something that, at least in my, not arguments, but my polite disagreements on the internet, I find that that's the diamond cutter's blade point at which we really start to agree.
So in other words, we can make America great by restoring the strength of the population. Is that where you're going?
Well, and to use the terminology of people that I don't necessarily agree with,
yeah,
they want to make America great again. And so through, like in Germany, you know, Hermann Scheer established the feed-in tariff system, and within 5 years he created 50,000 jobs, because the nature of renewables is decentralized. So you have to do it in the communities in which the power will be derived off of. And those jobs, I mean, you start talking to folks. I mean, I understand coal communities and respect hard work done, created, established communities, and they don't want to go. They want to stay where they are. So I think that that's maybe a middle ground. I don't know. I'll listen off the air, and I would love to hear what you think.
Well, okay, if you prefer. What it makes me think of is...
stay on, too.
Okay. What it makes me think of is I've read that when dealing with hardcore conservatives, the type that have voted for Trump, there are concepts that they have been inculcated with, that you have to frame things in those terms, otherwise they're immediately rejected. They don't want to hear what the facts are, they want to know what side you're on. So to get the facts in there, you have to frame it in terms of honor. You know, for example, it's honorable to look after all of the people, and you have to frame it as all of our people and get around the division that they've been trained to believe in. You know, when they think our people, they're thinking white people. But you need to just sort of broaden that if you can. It's honorable to act in a manner that benefits the society, this sort of way of talking. Also, they're interested in purity. And this has to do with their religious upbringing. So you can point out that Jesus said that you should love thy neighbor as thyself. They don't generally like to hear that one quoted very often, but it certainly applies to a Green New Deal program where we're trying to love our neighbors as ourselves by making sure we all have access to economic strength and
but
to the prosperity.
But only American neighbors, I've heard the argument, right? Because if you help outside of America, then you're a globalist, right? Instead of bring it back, okay, well...
Yeah, they're easily frightened, and that brings me to another base. You're talking to very frightened people who, at least in the political frame, you know, they've been watching Fox News, which frightens them every day, and they're very... You have to deal with that. I mean, they're everything is in terms of fear. They fear that these brown people are going to come massing over the border and take over their society.
And it's like, for a lot of the conversations I've had, I'm not allowed to speak poorly of Trump, and I hear that, but then I edge in with, well, what about Kushner? And they're like, well, and I'm like, no, but you can't give everyone a pass. And they're like, okay, well, maybe I can hear that. So I'm finding inroads here and there where we can kind of have a civilized discussion, because the earth is dying. You know, I mean, just look up.
Yeah, we can't afford to futz around. That's very true.
Yeah. So I love your show, and I love you, Teresa. Thank you so much for the work that you do, and to let other callers have a turn.
Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. Appreciate the boost. Okay, the number to call is 503-231-8187. Talking about the Green New Deal, and just beginning to elaborate what it might be. The Wikipedia article points out that Thomas Friedman was one of the earlier promoters of it. But the United Nations executive, UNEP executive director, Achim Steiner, unveiled the Global Green New Deal initiative that aims to create jobs in green industries, thus boosting the world economy and curbing climate change at the same time. Broadly, the proposals for the Green New Deal echo the recommendations of the United Nations organizations, of global non-governmental organizations, especially as these relate to reforms to measurement of fundamental ecosystem risk and financial liabilities. The reinsurance industry has also expressed support for the general principles of global carbon and emissions charges. There's so much to say about this. For example, I mean, not only would it be worthwhile to give everyone work changing the economy, but there's so much more efficiency now to solar power and wind, for example, that people are... countries, societies are choosing it because it's cheaper than oil. there's much more to be said about it. But I'll go to the next caller, 503-231-8187. Hi, you're on the air.
Teresa?
Yes.
Yes. I just wanted to tell you that when you started in beginning with, I guess you were reading from a paper about white privilege.
Yes.
That's the first time. Well, did you compose that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It is so good, and it is so purely truth that I have never heard anybody summarize it like that, and I would love to find out where I could get a copy of it rather than just listen to it again. I would like to get a copy of it so I can read it to people.
Okay, I'll put that rant on Facebook then. I'm Teresa Mitchell.
Oh, you call it a
rant? Yeah, I suppose it is, yeah. Well, okay,
wow.
An essay then.
It was excellent, excellent, excellent. And you have the finest brain I have ever heard on the radio, summarizing what is going on, why it's going on, how it's going on, and so succinctly. So, yes, I just wanted to let you know that I'm listening closely to that, and I need to read it to a few people who will not listen otherwise. You know, if I give them my opinion, they won't listen. But if I tell them, hey, I found something, I want you to hear this. And then read what you wrote, starting with the Bezos rant and the white privilege and how you can drive around and get stopped by cops but not get shot. This is an excellent way to make people who can't see really clearly see what's going on.
Well, thanks. I think I tend to overemphasize that part of it. I mean, it's also true that for my entire life, I've been able to just go get jobs that simply would not be available to someone who didn't have that familiarity, not just the color of the skin, but the education and the swimming in the white society shows in the way that, you know, I try to be charming when I apply for jobs. And so that's saved my butt. I don't know how many times, but yeah, whiteness is a very powerful force, and it definitely functions to exclude and to enrich people like me.
Yeah, everything's relative, isn't it? I am your age. I'm in my 60s, and I'm not ignorant or stupid, but I have been homeless for 3 years, living in my car.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you, but and because of my ability to look good, talk well, be polite, no one ever guessed. So I finally got a little place to live. It's low-income housing. I just moved in last week, thank God. You were saying about people working so hard that they can't stand up?
Well, yeah, for Amazon, yeah. And people are working three jobs, you know, just to have some tiny apartment.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm on Social Security, which is peanuts because of certain reasons. I'm only pulling in a little over $300 or $400 a month. So I have to work. I'm in my late 60s, and I got to work at finding some work where I don't have to stand on my feet because I can't do that anymore.
Gets to be terrifying, doesn't it?
Yeah. And
it's such a tiny amount of money. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay, but I'm not here to complain about myself. I'm here to let people see that we are living as a nation, like you said, in poverty. America's bankrupt. Look at California. Everybody says California is bankrupt. I mean, I read it all the time. And I was born and raised there.
Yeah, the coastal communities are doing great in California. You have these gigantic infrastructure developments, and it all looks neat and clean in various places, and that's what's promoted to the world. But you get away from the coast, and people are absolutely desperate.
You're talking about California?
Yeah.
Well, I look at YouTube a lot, and I have seen some real horrific things going on in coastal Los Angeles as far as homeless and what happens on the sidewalks and streets there.
Oh, yeah.
Because people don't have bathrooms. And like you said, how they can be swooped in on by policemen any time of the day or night and have their belongings and their heirlooms taken away. You can see that on YouTube.
It's so hellish and so unnecessary. Well, what do you think about this Green New Deal then?
Well, did you say it's, I'm not really clear on everything about it because I haven't been listening lately. I've been moving into this little apartment. Did you say it's a bill getting ready to be passed in Congress? Is that what's going on?
It's not yet a bill. At this point, it's a concept that the Democratic Party leadership is very much resisting. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is promoting it. Bernie Sanders is promoting it, and it's getting a tremendous amount of attention. So they're not able to ignore it, but they are trying to marginalize it because the core of the Democratic Party is, of course, about getting their corporate contributions and maintaining their power. Well, in that case, let me turn to more of a description of what it is and how it can be. It really can be an immediate change, certainly to homelessness. And to the, there's so many people who don't have access to a decent wage, not just in terms of the wage, but they can't get enough work at a high wage. And well, I'll just let me start on about the Green New Deal then, and I'll go to the next caller after you. And thanks very much for calling in.
Thanks so much, Teresa. You're the greatest.
Well, thank you. Thanks for calling in. Now, this Green New Deal is basically, it's going to require quite an infusion of cash, but as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was pointing out, we've done that before. We can come up with gigantic, unbelievable amounts of cash in this society. We've done it for the Pentagon and continue to do it for the Pentagon, so much so and for so long that they literally have trillions of dollars in semi-secret and mostly illegal bank accounts. They are their own power. And as I mentioned before, they are also the greatest polluters on Earth. So they have all the cash they need. That doesn't seem to be a problem appropriating even more for them. For the billionaires, they've been given a huge tax break by Trump because, you know, he likes to think of himself as among them. And he is serving those billionaires and making them happy so they'll come to his hotels, I guess. And when we had a tremendous collapse of the banks in 07 and 08, all of a sudden, the society was able to come up with trillions of dollars to support the banks, which is a stupid thing to do. Many of them should have been allowed to collapse, and those trillions should have gone into forming housing and jobs for the people, but that's what we're getting around to. It's like the first thing the conservatives say and that the Democratic leadership says is, well, this is just a fantasy. Where are we going to get the money for it? How could we possibly get the money for it? Let's just talk. They can get the money. They can get all the money they want instantaneously. Money, and as a matter of fact, when you are the global hegemon, money is even easier to get than it would be in any other sovereign country, simply because we control the dollar, the petrodollar, across the world. So one way to do it would be exactly the same way that was done to bail out the banks. Basically, the Treasury spits out the money. They say, this money now exists, and it does. And that's the funny thing about money. It would be a whole nother discussion. By the way, that's why you should never feel morally bad when you're behind on your credit cards. You actually created the money when you created the debt. Whole nother discussion. But to one suggestion for creating the Green New Deal is to just get three big coins of could be anything, but let's say platinum, and we'll say each of these coins is now worth $1 trillion. It is the $1 trillion coin. We're going to keep it here in the Treasury, and we're going to make loans based on that, and then you actually create the money by making the loans on it. I suppose at the core of it, it's an idea, it's a promise, it's the power of a positive idea. But it's also cash. It's the money is as real as it gets when it's created in that way. So there is no problem, absolutely no difficulty, if the United States decides, Congress decides, to go with a Green New Deal. They can fund it. Oh, yes, we can fund it. No problem with that. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And the engineer, who's been very helpful, thank you very much, engineer, says that Brandon is on the air. Hi, Brandon.
Hey, this is the first time I'm listening. It's really nice to hear you speak about things so clearly. And I wanted to follow up on exactly the issue of cash, because that's, I think, kind of at the heart of this discussion is how to pay for the various programs that society needs, you know, and you know, we're so allergic to anything that has a whiff of what might be considered socialism or communism or what have you, especially on the right. And I think that the coin idea is interesting, but I would, you know, offer, and maybe you could speak to it, that the money is already there, that the capital is already there, and the issue is the equitability of and distribution of that capital. And I know that Ocasio-Cortez recently, you know, got a lot of press for talking about a 70% tax on some of the highest brackets, and was pretty much laughed on both sides, laughed at on both sides of the spectrum. But I would say that that in particular is something that we have done before. When you look at, you know, the things that have made America great, so to speak, to use that language, if it was a New Deal, if it was a GI Bill, if it was any kind of, you know, CCC or housing projects, all these things were paid for at a very high tax rate by the most wealthy. We've had very strong progressive tax laws in place before, and it's the absence of that that has stopped wealth from being distributed, because as we well know, it doesn't exactly trickle down.
You're exactly right, and Ocasio-Cortez specifically was talking about something even milder than that. It was that marginal tax, which means that the $10 million that she was talking about would be taxed in the normal way, not changed at all, right up to $10 million, and just in case you need to, you know, amalgamate more than $10 million, that further money would be taxed at up to 70%. So if you amalgamated, if you earned... I did it. If you, I use that with scare quotes, though. If you somehow managed to get $20 million out of the workers that you have set to the tasks that you have created, then that second $10 million coming to you wouldn't come as $10 million. You'd only get $3 million. Poor you. Maybe it would come with a crying towel so that you could cry yourself to sleep with only $13 million to play with.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think the interesting part that I want to hear more from the proponents of this Green New Deal, and I love the branding of it, by the way, which the left frequently struggles with, is the idea that these things have been done before. When you talk about what has made America great, it is the equitable distribution of wealth, you know, at the hands of the government, and it's not communism. It's just responsible capitalism, perhaps.
And it does create more wealth. To have the wealth better distributed allows better innovation, and it builds on itself. One of the examples that we can actually see just out of an accident, out of a historic accident here in Oregon, in Portland, there's been a great deal more cash circulating in the local economy because the marijuana economy is not able to use the federal banks. So they have been forced to keep their money much more in circulation and much more locally in circulation than otherwise, and it has definitely boosted the amount of jobs and the pay of jobs in the area.
Awesome, awesome. I would just say the last thing is I would like to hear, you know, perhaps you speak about and just develop a broader consciousness around some of these, you know, higher tax efforts that have been executed in the past to success. So we know that we're not just, you know, going on the slippery slope to capitalism. We're really just revisiting what's worked in the past.
That's very true. I mean, the tax rates in the 50s and 60s were vastly greater than they are now, and the society was richer. Thanks very much for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Well, here's a bit on the Green New Deal from Kate Aronoff in The Intercept, if I skip the first paragraph or so. She writes, led by Representative-elect, well, I guess this is a little dated, led by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, 17 representatives and counting have signed to a measure that would create a select House committee tasked with crafting over the course of a year a comprehensive plan to move the U.S. away from fossil fuels by 2030 and accomplish seven goals related to decarbonizing the economy. This is the Green New Deal I'm talking about, and this was the committee that they tried to form and that Nancy Pelosi spiked by creating a do-nothing committee. But returning to the text, on Friday... I guess this is a couple of Fridays ago, Ocasio-Cortez and her collaborators gathered outside the Capitol to talk about the increasingly popular program. The quote is, "The push for a Green New Deal is about more than just natural resources and jobs. That's quoting Representative-elect Ayanna Pressley. She said, it's about our most precious commodity, people, families, children, our future. It's about moving to 100% renewable energy and the elimination of greenhouse gases. It's about ensuring that our coastal communities will have the resources and tools to build sustainable infrastructure that will counteract rising sea levels, beat back untenable natural disasters, and mitigate the effects of extreme temperature, end quote. On Monday evening, Senator Bernie Sanders hosted a town hall on the issue with Ocasio-Cortez inside the Capitol. And again, this text that I'm reading is actually dated by a week or so. And I need to check with the engineer and see if anyone's just waiting for that last effort to talk. Evie is on the air.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes.
I would like everybody to look at Solutionary Rail, S-O-L-U-T-I-O-N-A-R-Y, like a solution. Airy Rail, short little 3-minute video, and then call, email, or text Peter DeFazio, who is the chairperson of the Transportation Infrastructure Congressional Committee, and say how we want to make our economy more fair and just and robust. And clean up our environment and reduce a lot of our fires and the diseases by using the rail corridors for solar and wind to generate high power and lower power for electrifying the railroads, as well as generating that electricity on the rails and in the corridor and on the trains themselves, to then generate local economies and bring about justice, prevent the pollution.
Okay, so that's one of the specific things that could be under the umbrella of a Green New Deal. And I appreciate you calling in. With that, I'm almost out of time, so I'll spend the last couple of minutes giving more details about what the Green New Deal could be. Returning to the Intercept article, like its 1930s counterpart, the Green New Deal isn't a specific set of programs so much as an umbrella under which various policies might fit, ranging from technocratic to transformative. The sheer scale of change needed to deal effectively with climate change is massive, as the scientific consensus is making increasingly clear, requiring an economy-wide mobilization of the sort the United States hasn't really undertaken since World War II. And when I said that, if you're like me, you're probably thinking that that this was said by Naomi Klein, right here in these studios a couple years ago, and she was right. So now we're talking about the Green New Deal. While the Green New Deal imagination evokes images of strapping young men pulling up their sleeves to hoist up wind turbines in the mold of, you know, realist civilian Conservation Corps ads, its actual scope is far broader than the narrow set of activities typically housed under Green Jobs umbrella, or even in the original New Deal. Quoting Saikat Chakrabarty, Ocasio-Cortez chief of staff, quote, people often talk about the infrastructure investment that has to happen in new technology, but there's also an industrial plan that needs to happen to build entirely new industries. It's sort of like the moonshot. When JFK said America was going to the moon, none of the things we needed to get to the moon at that point existed, but we tried and we did it. He said the Green New Deal touches everything. It's basically a massive system upgrade for the economy, end quote. So that's what we're talking about, a massive system upgrade for the economy and allowing people to work at it. And one thing that hasn't been said is that one of the things that made the New Deal work, and it did work, actually, despite what you might have read in your conservative-stamped textbooks back in the whenever you went to school. Conservatives like to trash the New Deal in textbooks and try to make you believe that it didn't work. But actually, it did put the economy back on its feet just in time for the U.S. to fight very hard in World War II. And if it weren't for that, the United States wouldn't have been able to compete as it did in the Second World War. One of the aspects of this is having so many jobs that people aren't excluded. In other words, you've got a felony conviction, you've got a DUI, you haven't worked for 7 months, you had a drug problem once, whatever. People are needed. And the way it worked, for example, in Works Project Administration, when they built Timberline Lodge, it was just everyone who could aid to the effort was brought up there, and it was kept in a camp, which is now still called Government Camp, the area is anyway, a camp was there, and you got wages. They weren't very high, but you could stay in the camp, and so you were actually able to amass wages. And this is what people are not allowed to do, and this is why we were all stuck in poverty. We don't have savings because we don't make enough to make more than our basic expenses. We don't have enough to set aside for those, you know, too high rents, and that's a whole another issue. And that needs to change. So the Green New Deal is a vehicle that can bring all of those concepts together to criticize this unregulated capitalism in the correct way and move us towards a better society and save the planet. And so I'm for it. And you've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. You've been listening on 90.7 FM and other frequencies in Cascadia and via KBOO.FM, going out to you and all the ships at sea.
Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The events committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Don't leave me here, a twist in the wind.
KBOO proudly co-sponsors the Portland Folk Music Society Concert Series, kicking off 2019 with Americana Music Quartet True North. The show is January 18th, 7:30 p.m. at Reedwood Friends Church in Southeast Portland. True North is fronted by award-winning singer-songwriters Kristen